For this part of the show, we're going to do something a little bit different, not really, but I'm going to actually review a book I have. It's only like 135 or 40 pages, folks. It's from a guy named Paul Greenberg, and it's kind of a guide from, I want to use the word, in action for the way I feel about us trying to take care of the climate to a kind of a purposefulness of what he thinks we need to do. Now, I'm just going to do I want to do kind of a review, and then the book, like I said, it's 135 or 6 pages. I recommend you read it, but I'll give you the high points I found. I hope he doesn't mind. To begin with, it appears this fellow Paul Greenberg that wrote the book kind of wants us Americans to go on with it. He is named, I think he made it up, a climate diet. By that, he means most of the people in the United States need to make some changes to their lifestyles that would curb their carbon emissions. Right now, Americans rank worst in the world. That's not a thing to be proud of. Emitting around 16 metric tons of CO2, carbon dioxide, per person every year. While the United Nations recommends a per capita target no greater than just over 3 tons. Well, folks, reducing emissions just does not have to ruin your quality of life. In fact, according to Greenberg, he makes the compelling point that France, the United Kingdom, and Italy all have carbon footprints that measure 1/3 of us here in the United States. He says there are simple ways to adjust one's lifestyle that can have a positive cumulative effect. Hence the title of his book, which I should tell you now, I guess, The Climate Diet, 50 Simple Ways to Trim Your Carbon Footprint. As I already mentioned, the book is extremely short and quick to read. It says here, 135 pages, many of which contain a single paragraph of just pure advice. The 50 tips are divided across 6 categories that include your food and drink, making families, staying home, leaving home, saving and spending, fighting and winning, while participating in climate change advocacy. While many of the tips will be familiar to people already striving to live what I call a less impactful life, Greenberg offers some suggestions that do feel novel and kind of intriguing to me. For example, he sings the praises of bivalves, of all things. Those are mussels and clams and oysters, as a sustainable seafood option. Why? Because they require no feed, subsist on algae, and clean the water as they grow. And incidentally, he points out they cost ecologically only 0.6 kilos of CO2 to produce. Incidentally, that's better even than lentils, which come in at about 0.9. And lentils are pretty doggone efficient. In this book, he also suggests that people switch from eating beef to chicken, as it generates about 7 kilos of CO2 per kilogram of meat compared to, listen to this, beef's enormous 27 kilogram footprint. To quote him, if every beef-eating American switched to chicken, the United States will cut its carbon emissions by over 200 million tons. Now, bear in mind, I'm adding this not from his book. It's because of the way we raise our beef. It's because of the way we send them to confined animal feeding operations. If cattle were allowed to grass-fed, grass-finished, take them directly to the butcher and have them, it would be a heck of a lot lower imprint on our world. However, beef certainly wouldn't be as inexpensive as it is today. I do realize that this kind of might rankle the vegetarians and vegans who would like to just see meat consumption go away altogether. But as Greenberg explains, his approach could be called, and we have a new word here, folks. Are you ready for a new word? Climatarian. I swear, I've never heard that word. So we're going to call it being a climatarian. It is an emphasis on the most realistic food changes that could be taken up by the largest number of people to kind of lop the greatest possible chunk off of American emissions. And in one part of the book I looked, when it comes to making families and building relationships, he advocates avoid flying to reunions and choosing rather to get together where the most people are located. Get a lower impact pet. You know, a mid-sized dog carries about 20% of the energy requirements of a single human. Kind of weird, but I never thought of it. Consider having fewer children This is going to work. To curb population growth. I'm sure the Catholics are going to love to hear that. The book offers some resources for single-child families. Let me reiterate here. I'm quoting parts from this guy's book, and I agree with most everything he says. I really like it, as a matter of fact. He kind of goes off the deep end a little bit, but don't they all? As for staying home, Greenberg suggests putting an effort into making your house a more welcoming space rather than just spending your time on some kind of carbon wasteful travel. That's his opinion. There's the usual advice about making your house more energy efficient. Rethinking transportation, which I do. I ride electric bicycle 5 days a week. Making my clothes last. I'm so tired of the clothes I've got, but I still have them. As well as a radical suggestion to convert lawns to, he says, to forest. I'm telling you, convert your lawn to an all-natural native landscape. Doesn't have to be forest, but it could certainly be more nature-friendly if you quit buying plants that never grew here until we brought them here. He gave me an ideal point. Just half an acre of lawn converted to natural allows that particular area to grow to maturity and will sequester more CO2 than a car emits, the same car you're driving, in more than a year. Interesting concept. And here's one of his concepts I agree with, although it's not as easy as he writes in his 130-page book. One of the book's lengthiest recommendations I saw is to buy an electric car if you got to drive. Well, we all have to drive. Greenberg argues that it contributes to bolstering renewable energy because electric vehicles really do help resolve the issue of how to store surplus wind and solar power that's being generated at times when most people cannot use it. For instance, at noon to midnight, nighttime. This concept is known as the EV geeks as vehicle to grid or the V2Gs. Now, let me give you my 2 cents. 2 weeks ago on these same shows, I introduced, like everybody didn't know, the Ford Lightning F-150 pickup truck. It comes and it'll go 230 miles on a charge, and if you add a grand or two to it, it'll go over 300 miles. Here's the cool thing. You can also plug it into your house and run your house for 3 days if we have another one of these crazy winters like we had this past winter. It'll run the average house for 3 days, folks. You've got yourself a portable electric control system for your house and a pickup that goes about 300 miles. Oh, and incidentally, the pickup also comes with plug-ins, if you happen to be a worker, that'll run your equipment all day. It's got 3 or 4 plug-ins in the back in the bed. It's got some more inside the truck. It is an amazing vehicle, and you're going to see a heck of a lot more of them in the next 3 to 5 years from probably every one of their competitors. And in the final section of the book, it actually argues that people should reach out to their local politicians to take action on climate change. But what he says, it's important to avoid actually over unrealistic demands. Politicians are much more likely to respond to calls to actions that can be accomplished within their given scope of authority and that are relevant to the people who voted them into office. And this is kind of my personal take here. Personal stories and in-person interactions, believe it or not, go a long way towards influencing a number of our lawmakers. In my opinion, the book's kind of brief, but it's solid, practical, educational, and motivating. It stays true to the goals that he, Greenberg, professes in the introduction. And the introduction says, quote unquote, to help you get from wherever you are right now to a better place in the future. It does, in my opinion, take a formidable looming crisis and break it down into what I consider manageable chunks that infuse the reader with a sense of maybe at least hopefulness. There's profound satisfaction in doing something rather than doing nothing. But just so you know, the name of the book is The Climate Diet. It was published just now, practically, April of 2021. I found it on the internet, and so you have to just put the name in The Climate Diet. But I'm sure by now it's available in a number of other places, and the rumors are it's going to soon even be on Audible for those of you who do Audible books, and that's one of my favorite things to do. For the final portion of this show, and it sort of ties in, but it doesn't, so you'll just have to flow with me. Small drillers talking about oil and petroleum and fracking now, are now the biggest polluters in the United States. As the world's oil and gas giants face increasing pressure to reduce the fossil fuel emissions overall, small, privately held drilling companies are becoming the country's biggest emitters of greenhouse gases, often and probably most of the time by buying up the industry's higher polluting assets. According to a new analysis, which is kind of startling to me, the latest emissions data disclosed to the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, five of the industry's top 10 emitters of methane, which incidentally, folks, is a really particularly potent planet-warming gas, far more dangerous than CO2 per volume, are little-known oil and gas producers, some backed by some really obscure investing firms, whose environmental footprints are wildly large relative to their small production. In some cases, the companies are buying up high-polluting assets directly from the largest oil and gas corporations like ConocoPhillips or BP. And in other cases, private equity firms acquire risky oil and gas properties, develop them, and sell them quickly for just a maximum amount of profit. The largest emitter, Hilcorp Energy, reported almost 50% more methane emission from its operations than the nation's largest fossil fuel producer, which incidentally right now happens to be ExxonMobil, despite pumping far less oil and gas. To kind of cut to the chase overall, the 195 smallest producers included in the whole report collectively accounted for less than 9% of the production, but are responsible for over 22% of total reported emissions. And here's what's even weirder. Bankruptcies have, of course, surged with all that's going on, raising concerns over a risking number of orphaned and abandoned wells, which incidentally, the way that we run this, thanks to big government, they have no responsibility to clean up. They leave the dirt and take the oil. And this kind of law needs to change, folks. They need to be responsible, just like you and I don't stack all the trash out in the front yard of our house and leave it. Somebody has to take it away. These people should have a responsibility to clean up their mess. I don't care how big or how small they are. And that's just my opinion. Organic Matters. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back after this with more of the show.